Okay, Rabbi Zayn. Do you need me to wear this, or is this... Check me out. Okay. The pasuk tells us that Klal Yisrael was unable to hear the message of the Geula. It says, "V'lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha." That the Klal Yisrael was too busy. They had a shortness of breath, and so they couldn't hear the good news at the level that they needed to hear it. And we find the parallel to this when Paro first encounters the message that he's supposed to send Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. He says, "I see that the Klal Yisrael, ki nir pimhem. We've got a tichpad ho'avodo al anoshim v'yasuva, v'al yishu b'divrei shakir. Make the work harder. They shouldn't think about nonsense. There's this whole religion business and serving Hashem, and avoda. It's nonsense. And I need to, the antidote to nonsense is make them busy. Tichpad ha'avoda aleihem. Ve'al yishu ve'al kain ve'al minchaso lo sha'a. Now to pay attention to ve'al yishu ve'ashoresh yud shin ayin. That's from paying attention, to pay attention to something. Ve'al yishu b'dvar sheker. They shouldn't pay attention to this nonsense that Moshe and Aaron are coming talking about leaving Mitzrayim and going to serve 3 days and avodas Hashem. If they're just, they got to work harder. So he toughens up the workload. He tells them he's not going to give them the raw ingredients for the work that they're going to do, so that they'll have to work harder, so that they shouldn't be pay any attention to this nonsense. And it seems that the strategy was useful. It was a successful strategy, because when it came time to actually tell the message to Klal Yisrael, it says in this week's parsha in Va'era, Perek Vav Pasuk Tes, V'lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha. They couldn't hear the message. They were just too overwhelmed by the work. Paro is the personification of the Yetzer. That's what Paro is. Paro is also a person, but he's the personification of the Yetzer Hara. And it's very important that we recognize that all avoda of Musar, all personal growth, requires an internal quiet. Without an internal quiet, nothing begins. And what the Yetzer does, because that's Paro, what the Yetzer does is to try to keep us constantly preoccupied. When we were in the secular world, so it's a preoccupation with whatever is going on, 7,433 channels on television, and money to be made, and bills to pay, and traffic to fight. And then you get to the Torah world, and it's you got to learn, and you got so much to know, and you got so much to do, and there's so much to learn, and if you're not learning, you know, you're wasting time, and you got to do more. And the Yetzer has an interest in this. The Yetzer's interest in this is making sure that you don't stop to smell the flowers. So you say, well, what are you supposed to do when you stop? I mean, so I'll stop. What do you think about when you're not thinking? What are you supposed to do? What's involved in this pause? And the answer, first of all, is setting out clearly that there's a state called Nachas Ruach and Yishuv Hadas. Nachas Ruach means what? Nachas Ruach means when spirit is at rest. And Yishuv Hadas. Yishuv Hadas means one's thoughts are smooth or at rest. Not no thinking, but they're at rest, meaning Yishuv doesn't mean rest, actually. It means liyashev, settled. Good word. Settled thoughts. The call is to get away from the intense blips on the screen. It's to get a steady rhythm where when you get a steady low-level rhythm, then the thoughts that are important can make a blip on the screen. People who are forever on a this chair's over here, a few of them, and I don't bite, so Rabbi Yisrael Salanter advocated, because of this idea, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter advocated not to get terribly excited about things in general, so that you can leave room for yourself to get excited about the things that are important. In other words, high-flying amusement parks were not designed for Bnei Torah. Unless you're the sort of person, there's a comedian from England who is known for one of his famous skits is he goes on one of these loop-de-loop-de-loop where everybody's upside down and their hair is standing up and they're just freaked out. And at the end, you know, everybody is just screaming as this thing comes down 90 miles an hour to a screeching, and he's fallen asleep. You know, that's like one of his standard skits. That's very British, you know. So we're meant to keep the level of hit pa'alut, or of things that are causing us a lot of emotional blips on the screen, we're meant to keep those relatively moderated, so that when we do get excited about something in our avodas Hashem, we can actually get excited about it. Otherwise, our excitement of what's going on in avodas Hashem just becomes lost in a wash of other excitements. It's just a person who's always kind of hyped about everything, and so they're hyped about Pshat and Rashi also. But that's because they're just hyped. It is not avoda. It is not actually bringing out what is important about avodas Hashem. But for the purposes of our discussion, we want to know, how do I start creating the calm or the quiet inside so that I can actually do the work that needs to be done to move forward in my life? Paro's suggestion is just be preoccupied. If you're preoccupied, you'll always be driving yourself crazy, and that way you'll never move forward. And you get the illusion of moving forward, because today I fought traffic, and then I fought the bills, and then I paid this, and then I ran to here, and then I did it, and I took care of this, and I got 18 things on my list that I took care of, so it must be that I'm moving forward. And I didn't move forward at all. All I did was build storehouses for Paro. I did nothing. It's a fantastic ploy for how to make sure that the person actually never moves forward, that Paro used and that the Yetzer uses throughout time, is just get the person to have the illusion of moving forward because he's overwhelmed with the to-dos of his life, so that he, as long as he doesn't do one thing, he does not stop to calm the system down sufficiently so that he can actually move forward. So I was about to talk about, so what do I do when I'm trying to calm the system down? What does that look like? So I wanted to actually get practical about it. I wanted to actually discuss it. But first, before, the need for it. Does anybody have questions, comments, reactions about the need for that internal calm so that you can move forward? Does that make sense to everybody? Is that yes, please.
How do you know you spoke about the blip of something that's important. There are lots of blips that seem important, but they're not. How do you know what's an important blip and what's important?
I think that the strategy that we use for the actual calming will help answer that. Excellent question. Yeah.
What is a blip, and why do I need to see it?
Okay. What is a blip is that anything that arouses me. You're all sitting there with a little bit of help. You know, I am a Food and Drug Administration approved non-narcotic sleep aid. You know, I can talk in a monotone and get anyone who just happened to having some sleep difficulties, I can get you to sleep. But I may say something in the course of that that would wake you up and start you thinking. That thought that I said in the midst of my standard monotone, trying to help you fall asleep, and you say, don't say things like that, that doesn't help me sleep. Because then I start thinking and reacting and I'm engaged. Anything at all that takes you out of that just kind of cruising on just kind of cruise control. Put the thing on 100 kilometers, turn it on, and you just kind of watch the scenery. And if you heard on the news that 7,000 people were blown up, say, oh, that's kind of interesting. And what's on the other channel? You know, just kind of cruising along. There's nothing there because your brain is just turn your brain off. So, but if something would make a blip, that would give you an alert. So what would that usually be? Like a deer running across the road. So that makes a big blip. So if you're a very, very trained driver, a very highly trained driver, trained professionally, so a deer on the road wouldn't even make a blip. Because you know exactly how to respond to it, the same way that a soldier, a very well-trained soldier, knows how to respond to an enemy attack. You know, everybody else would lose their, you know, bowel control. And he's just responding because that's what he was trained to do. So we actually want to train ourselves as to how to relate to the constant push of the world that we're in. We want to train ourselves so that we know how to relate to those things in a relatively calm way, so that when there is something that's meant to wake us up, it stands out as being significant. In other words, we want to get to the point where, as a well-trained Ben Torah, I've learned how to deal with the fact that, yeah, so, there's no water. There's no water. So you mean you're not going to do anything about it? I am going to do something about it. I'm just not going to get excited about it. Because I'm training myself to the best of my ability to not get excited about stuff that doesn't help me move forward. So let me say it out specifically so that you get an answer to the question. Everybody gets more of a sense of where we're going with this. Let's say I stop before davening, or at some point in my day, I find myself getting a little tense, or find that there's getting a little distracted. I don't know exactly what I'm not clear, I'm not focused. I'm a little distracted. So the first thing I need to do is to recognize that being distracted is paro. That's the first thing I need to recognize, is that, okay, the battle's on. Am I going to be distracted? And the Yiddish word is for tumult. Or am I going to get clear and settle myself to the place called Nachas Ruach Nishuv Hadas. So the first thing you need to do is recognize that this state of intensity or distraction is an enemy, not a friend.
Way that we that we then take and can control of the situation that we can't really control.
Well, the sense of lack of control of a situation is often what prompts this sense of being out of control, for sure.
And how do you control it?
Okay, so the goal is not to then control the situation. The goal is to control my internal state of calm. So the first thing that I need to do, after discovering that this is the Yetzer involved, is to remind myself about my mission statement. I need to take a moment to go back to my mission statement. My mission statement is the answer to the question of why am I alive and what have I chosen to do with the life that was given to me. That is a statement that gets modified throughout our life if we stop and think about it. As we find out new information, as we find out more about the world, that statement gets modified as we go along. So the first step after recognizing that, hey, wait a second, this state of unrest is not healthy for my growth, I go back to my mission statement. What's it about? Why am I here? Why am I here globally and why am I here locally in the yeshiva? Why am I here globally means overall, what am I supposed to be doing in life? And why am I here? Learning Torah. I then have to check for any urgency, any sense of urgency. Those are the ones that usually start in your mind with the word gotta. Gotta. I gotta this, I gotta that. Check for the gottas. When you have the gottas, when you can identify the gottas, ask yourself, are these gottas helping me move closer to my mission statement? Or are they pulling me away from my mission statement? In other words, there might be an urgency to understand Rashi. I'm really thrown by the fact that Rashi doesn't seem to make sense in light of what I saw in the previous Rashi. So Rashi's not making sense to me, and I feel an urgency to try to get pshat in Rashi. You may discover that urgency is actually helping you move closer to your mission statement. Now, it's not all urgency, by definition, is bad. We're supposed to have a certain urgency to life. But the urgency that I'm feeling right now, and I get in touch with that urgency, the urgency is to, like, finish before my chavrusa finishes. Or to say a joke in shiur. I feel this urgency. I got to say a joke. So that could be a positive thing, right? If you see that everybody's kind of 9/10 asleep and kind of losing it, sometimes a light word can lighten things up and help people move forward. Alternately, it could be, I just want to be a cut up. I don't want to. This is too serious. So each person on his own has to ask. A, what's my mission statement? Review the mission statement for a brief moment. B, what are the urgencies? What am I feeling is urgent? I gotta get to the Misrad HaPanim and renew my visa. I gotta figure out how to get to Misrad HaPanim and renew my visa. Okay, so that urgency, is that urgency, I'm not talking about the act that the urgency implies, the state of that urgency, Is that urgency moving me closer to my mission statement or further from it? No. It's got nothing to do with my mission statement. It's just something I need to take care of and I got to do. Slow. The urgency is always working for you or against you. It's either paro or it's real zrizus. That's what it is, folks. It's either zrizus. It's either the urgency is either that which is actually going to move you forward and impel you towards your mission statement, or it's paro. I'm not talking about and they're analyzing whether it's a good thing or a bad thing to renew your visa. That is not what I'm discussing. I am not talking about the act of going to work or going to learn or going to Misrad HaPanim to renew your visa. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the sense of urgency that is inside me, that is causing unrest. That sense of urgency is either wonderful zrizus that you need to grab onto and really nurture it so that it impels you forward, or it is urgency that is paro's urgency. Tichbad ho'avoda aleihem ve'al yish'u bidvar sheker. If they just get so urgently busy, they won't think about avodas Hashem. And if you discover that there is something urgent inside that is helping to impel you towards your mission, then dwell on it. Build up on it. Think about it. Feel its urgency. Think about what you feel that urgency is. So for example, if you hear something in a schmooze, and for a brief moment it feels like, yeah, I got to do that. That's important. I got to do that. And the Yetzer says, come on, it's okay. It's like everything else. You can do it tomorrow. So don't worry about it. Don't get so excited. Maybe you should rather get excited about the fact that there's not enough heat in your room. That's something to get excited about. Don't get excited about schmooze. Don't get excited. Now I have to stop and I say, wait a second. I feel a gotta. I feel a certain gotta. Let me stop. Do the self-check. First, recognize urgency is the most precious thing in my life. Urgency is extremely important. The wrong urgency will destroy me, and the right urgency will come against the backdrop of calm that will impel me forward. Let me stop and do a self-check. What's my mission statement? What's the urgency? If the urgency feels like it is a blip on the screen that is meant to move me closer to my mission statement, you must stop and really dwell on it. Think about it. Elaborate on it. Blow it up. You can't blow up something that doesn't make a blip on the screen. If somebody tells you a chazal that doesn't speak to you at all, you cannot breathe life into that chazal. It ain't going to work, folks. What you can do is when there is a small blip on the screen, you can stop and dwell on that blip and you can build the blip up into something that really, you can really build it up into an urgency. But you can't build up something that's just a flat line. You know, you put thumpers on a person with a flat line, it just doesn't do anything. So don't try to build the Dvar Torah for yourself. Don't try to build your avoda around something that doesn't speak to you. But if something does speak to you, it's extremely important to dwell on it. And that's why it's so important to overall get used to reducing the urgency of things that are unimportant. A, because they make you too busy to think about the stuff that is important. And B, because they create an internal noise. And in that state of internal noise, you can't hear the little nuance of things that excite you. If you're used to big excitements, so you're not going to pick up a little excitement. It's like somebody who's been listening to heavy rock music and then tries to listen to the delicate nuances of a sonata. Their ears, they just can't hear it anymore. They can't hear it. They hear the basic melody. but they can't hear the nuanced strains of the music. They just can't hear it anymore. Their ears don't pick it up. They're too used to this tumult and the noise. Well, that's what happens internally when we allow ourselves to get very urgent. So we now have urgency can move me towards my mission or away from my mission. The urgency that moves me away from my mission actually does the second function of dulling my senses to those urgencies that would move me towards my mission. That's Paro. That's Paro's strategy. Moshe brought a message. It was a message that every one of them knew was true. There had been a Masorah in Klal Yisrael, that the person who would be Moshiach Klal Yisrael would come with what words? Anybody got that from last week's Parsha? Pakod Pakaditi, right? What had Yosef had said to the brothers? Shem Pakod Yifkod Ischem. And he's going to come with a Lashon of Pakod Pakaditi. So they all knew that. They all knew it. And when Moshe Rabbeinu came and announced what they didn't know, they knew. This was what they had, a Masoris from their grandfather, that when the person who's Moshiach Klal Yisrael is going to come, he's going to come with the Lashon of Pakod Pakaditi. And there Moshe's there. Pakod Pakaditi. But they couldn't hear it. Because the blip that it would have made on the screen would have required that they have calm. And then it would have made a blip. Hey, wait a second. That's the Lashon that my grandfather told me about. And then they would have been able to work themselves up into the Hakaras HaTov, into the gratitude, into saying Hallel, and they would have gotten very excited. And instead, there was so much urgency in their heads. Where are we going to find the straw for those bricks? What are we going to do? And that's naturally what happens when there's too many things on our to-do list. It's like out of control. And you end up with, where am I going to find straw? How am I going to find straw? So I said, wait a second. Is this sense of urgency moving me forward or backwards? I said, well, but I still have to find the straw. I still have to find straw. The answer is, if I'm going to find straw, it's going to have to be with less urgency. Because I cannot afford the amount of urgency that this straw finding is causing. Paro was a very clever psychologist. Paro knew that they wouldn't be able to be this sophisticated. When your workload gets this hard, they wouldn't be able to. I remember an incident that happened that I was told, Baruch Hashem, I was not there, in the camps. So the Germans were doing whatever they could to try to kill Jews. And the main emphasis was to try to do it for free. They didn't have money for killing Jews. They just didn't have money for that. So they were constantly trying to find inexpensive ways of killing Jews. So they could kill even one Jew for free, that was for them, that was a tremendous success. They could kill 50 or 100 Jews for free, so that was a landslide. So there was one of more than one point that my mother and my grandmother were together in a room with a whole bunch of other women there in the room, and they simply closed off the room. They simply sealed off the room. There were windows up above that had been blackened over from the outside. The room was sealed. Just see how long they, you know, for free, they could kill Jews by suffocating them in this room. Put too many people into a completely sealed room, and see, you kill them. They won't all die that way, but, okay, as many as would die. So my mother reported to me that my grandmother, La Shalom, was up on a top bunk. Obviously the heat up there had become very intense, much quicker, obviously, than down below. And she, my mother, together with a number of other girls, were trying to get these older people, their mothers mostly, off of this top bunk. In the meantime, my mother had noticed, and she was a youngster at the time, she was a young teenager, she had noticed that there were these windows. up there, then she saw, she detected the fact that they had been blackened out, that they were in fact windows. She had this whole plan in her mind that if they make a pyramid, the girls will all pyramid on top of each other, that they could break the glass and get air into the room. So she was quickly trying to get my grandmother down off of this upper bunk and to go make this pyramid. My mother reports that in the midst of all of this jostling in this valley of death that they were in the midst of all of this jostling, either she or somebody else bumped the girl next to her and her glasses fell down. And obviously we're crushed under the throngs of people trying to do the same thing. I don't think my mother gave it a second thought. In the valley of death, it's hard to think. As my grandmother was being brought down, so my mother started in with this idea that she could break the windows and make a pyramid and break the windows. My grandmother, Alas Shalom, turned to my mother, she should be well, and said to her, "She can't see without her glasses. Bend down, see what's left of her glasses, and see if you can give her back any of her glasses." "The window will wait. She can't see without her glasses." And I remember being struck when I first heard this story. How do you do that? How do you still the noise? How do you get the noise level, the internal noise level down, so that the things that are meant to be blips on the screen register on the screen? In the valley of death. It's doable. And she bent down. She said to me, she said, "I don't even know if this girl survived. I have no idea what happened to this girl. I never saw her again. I have no idea what ever happened. I only know one thing. I bent down, I found what was left of her glasses, I straightened them up the best as I could, and I gave them back to her. We then made the pyramid, and they indeed broke the glass, and they were able to get air into the room. As a matter of fact, my grandmother even told them to bring snow, to throw snow into the room. Somehow she knew that if they threw snow, they could aerate the room more quickly. They could oxygenate the room more quickly if they threw snow into the room. So she actually heaped in snow from outside this window into the room. Not all of us are able to do that. I don't know if any of us are able to do that. But not one of us is allowed to say, "My life is simply too hectic. The urgencies in my life are simply too hectic. I can't even think about what you're talking about." You must think about what I'm talking about. You must think about my grandmother and thousands other like her who in moments where the real things are blips on the screen, they're able to detect those because the other stuff has been calmed down. And the way to do that is by checking the urgency against the mission statement. The urgency being positive or negative, it's either going to help me towards my mission statement or not. Again, we are not talking about the content. We're not talking about the content of the urgency. We're talking about the urgency itself. Be very careful. This is not, "Oh, so that means that the only thing that will help me is if I have an urgency to get Pshat and Rashi." No. But the urgency itself is either moving me forward or backwards. Urgency is never neutral.
Should you judge the urgency by what it's trying to get you to do?
No. Don't judge the urgency by what it's trying to get you to do. Judge the urgency on its own merit.
The urgency is trying to get me to do Shana Pnim. So therefore that urgency is either trying to take me out of the basement just for a good reason or...
No,
based on
just an urgency. I have to go to Bishrat Apanim. And I'll go to Bishrat Apanim. But the urgency is distracting me from my mission. The urgency is putting blips on the screen that is just noise. I don't need any urgency about it. I just need to go to Bishrat Apanim.
Okay.
Don't get too excited about having to take a shower. Take a shower. Don't not take a shower just because I was excited about taking a shower. Work on reducing the urgency associated with taking the shower and then take a shower. That's that the avoda that we're talking about is an avoda that will allow us to create the emotional base against which personal avoda can happen. You hear a chazal. Chazal is meant to speak to us. That's what's supposed to happen. A chazal is meant to speak to us. If it's meant to speak to us, that means it's meant to excite us, to move us. How can it move me? Because I can take what moves me and really exaggerate it, work on it, build it up. But if the screen is filled with all sorts of noise, I may not even pick it up. And if I do pick it up, I won't be able to differentiate it from the other things that are blipping on my screen. I want to be able to differentiate. This is an important blip, and this is not. And in order to do that, regular self-checks, sort of checking in with myself. Urgency against mission statement. Questions, comments, reactions. Yeah?
How do you build up a good blip?
How do you elaborate or exaggerate a good blip? Generally speaking, by focusing on details. Instead of allowing it to be a brushstroke. As I'll tell you, there's a fellow in Mexico. You know where Mexico is? Yeah. There's a fellow in Mexico who's becoming from, there's absolutely nobody else around who's doing any Torah and mitzvos, and he's been trying to build himself up in his Torah and mitzvos there in his town in Mexico. How do you feel about him?
Respect.
Good. Some feeling of respect. Good. Anybody else have any feelings about this fellow? What's that?
Oh.
I'm proud of him. I'm proud to be part of the story that he's... I'm proud to know the story. Proud to be a Jew. Proud to know that there's such a fellow. Good. What else? I'm sorry?
Shame.
I'm feeling a little ashamed?
Yeah, shame.
Ah, like as in South African shame?
Yeah.
Yeah, ah, shame. Right. That's very, right. Good. I'm feeling a sense of compassion towards him. Sense of warmth and compassion towards this fellow. What's that?
I know that idea.
Okay. Good. Now, there were no texts for him to find in his town. There were no texts, there's no Jewish bookstore. He's been scrounging and hunting for any old people in the town who might have anything at all that he can work with. His parents are absolutely dead set on his being hospitalized for losing it. His job doesn't allow him the time to do this, and he's managed to find ways to squeeze learning into his job schedule. How are you feeling about him?
It's a hero.
It's a hero. Right? I'm feeling a lot of things about him. And if you go on finding more details about who he is and what he's about, then here's another thing you can do. Maybe you haven't thought about for a while, maybe you haven't thought about how precious Torah is. Im lo b'risi yomim v'layla chukos shemayim v'aretz lo samti. The whole world. Yeah, maybe I haven't thought for a while what it means for somebody to learn a moment of Torah. I'm thinking about Torah in terms of, 8 hours a day of Torah. Maybe it's been a while since I've stopped to think about what 1 second of Torah is. Maybe it's been a while. Maybe I haven't really stopped and paused about the Chazal of Yofesh HaAchas, Torah, Meisim Tovim. Maybe you haven't thought about the fact that one moment of mitzvos and Torah is greater than all of Olam Haba. Maybe I haven't thought about that for a while. So now let me build up the other part of the story, which is the Torah. Significance of a moment of learning Torah. How are we feeling about this guy? Okay? So what we did was we took a story. We took a story, and the stories are happening to us all the time. You went this morning to Shir. I presume most of you went to Shir. And you, maybe for a brief moment, you thought you understood something in Shir. No? Not today. Not today. Maybe you have something during Seder. So, I had a little bit of a feeling. A little feeling. You know, I've been going to university, and I'm used to hopping things. I mean, it did. It kind of registered on the screen for a moment. I thought I understood what they, you know, what was going on, and maybe understood a little bit clearer than I had it before. But you know, whatever. I'm used to understanding things. I'm not dumb. I've understood things before, and okay. It was a blip on the screen. What do I need to do with that blip? I need to grab the blip. How do I grab it? Think about the details. There's two parts of the details. One is me, and the other is Torah. Me. Think about who I am. First of all, who I was just a few short years ago. What chance did I have? What chance in the world was there that I would right now be thinking about Torah? Be worrying about whether I understood Torah. To elaborate on what it means that I can find room in myself to actually be concerned about Rashi. So think about the details involved in that. And then you move over to the other side, which is, maybe I haven't stopped and thought about what a moment of Torah means. Yeah, I heard it once. It was a nice schmooze about a moment of Torah. Yeah, I kind of heard about that, you know. I heard it, and I did what I do with all the other schmoozing. I stored it somewhere. It's there so I can tell it over to somebody else. But now's the moment. There was a blip on the screen. Grab the blip and enhance it. But if your system is so full of blips, I'm getting excited about the guy who took my Gemara, and I'm getting excited about the water, and I'm getting excited about the shower, and I'm getting excited. So the whole the noise. Well, what are you going to do with that blip? The blip, it doesn't even stand out enough to even get noticed. You have to turn the quiet down so that you can notice it. That requires a moment of concentration, of focus, and it requires getting into yourself, and it requires a little bit of time. I don't think we can do it in a second. It requires a little bit of time, because it requires recognizing the urgency, requires recognizing that urgency is either working for me or against me. It requires checking my urgency against my mission statement and either celebrating and elaborating the urgency when it propels me forward in my mission statement, or dampening the urgency because it's moving me away from my mission statement. Questions, comments, reactions? Yeah.
What's about a big blip that gets too big without you and the bigger.
So the one nice thing, you never have to worry that the kosher blips will ever make themselves too big. You never have to worry about that. The Yetzer Hara has taken care of that. Has taken care of making sure that anything that's really, really, really big on the screen, so big in fact that I can't function. Oh, you do have such a concept, I guess. You have it, the chasen is putter. Chasen is putter from Kriya Shema, Medina de Mishnah. Chasen is putter from Kriya Shema because it's too big of a blip on the screen. As a Dvar Mitzvah, that's too big of a blip on the screen. Okay. I guess in theory you could have something like that. Right. It's not... Because that's because our Kriya Shema is not much of a blip. Right. Kriya Shema is not much of a blip. Look. Developing the skill of how to dampen a blip requires working with your mission statement. Let's say a person has an anxiety disorder and they find themselves dwelling on a concern, recycling and dwelling on the concern. How do they know that that's not working, that that's working against him? How does he know that that's not, that he has to dampen that? It does not move him forward in terms of his mission statement. See, without the mission statement, without your anchor in your mission statement, without not being firmly anchored in your mission statement, there's no way to filter urgencies. How do I know? Maybe this is a good urgency. I don't know if it's a good urgency or a bad urgency. I don't know. That's why it's so important to be anchored in your mission statement, because then you have a filter. Does that make some sort of sense?
Part of the job is finding the mission statement.
Yeah. Finding the mission statement?
Yeah. You can generalize what's a general mission statement, but to really, to be tight with it, to, in the pratim.
That work you owe to yourself. It's the first line of the Mesilas Yesharim. First line of the Mesilas Yesharim, of Perek Aleph, Mesilas Yesharim, is mission statement. Yesod ha-chasidus v'sharesh ha-avodah ha-tamima hu shi-yizbar v'yiz-ames etzala-odam machovoso ve'olamo ulemahu tzorech lasim agamoso kol yimei chayav. The basic aleph base of all avodas Hashem is to ask myself, what's my mission? Why am I here? And what should I be putting my efforts and energy into doing? The Torah offers a recommended mission statement. Our personal mission statement is the degree to which we have come close to the Torah's mission statement. Mission statement does not mean that that's what I'm going to do all the time. It means that's where I'm aiming all the time. It's the place where I can go back when I get lost in the woods. It's the map that allows me to go back and find my way. Because the mission statement will always point me in the right direction. My personal mission statement is what will guide me in the right direction. Most fellows, when they have difficulty with a mission statement, it's because they're trying to work two mission statements. They're trying to work their old mission statement and their new mission statement at the same time. That gets you into trouble. That creates an internal conflict, an absolute lack of calm. Because you can't give quality to either mission statement if you have two mission statements. Most of us get into trouble because we don't have clarity on the mission statement because we're trying to satisfy two mission statements. One that we were raised with and one that we've adopted today. We've adopted a mission statement today that Avodas Hashem, Torah, and Mitzvos is the reason why I was created, and to be Dovik in Hashem and to come closer to what's real and what's durable and what's eternal, that is a mission statement that we've developed as we've matured. And there's another mission statement which said everything's supposed to be easy and you try to go through life getting into as little difficulty as possible, doing as little and stressing yourself as little as absolutely possible until the day you die. And hopefully have a lot of money in the process. Okay, that other mission statement's a little bit incompatible with the new mission statement. So the incompatibility between those two mission statements creates tremendous internal stress. Because I'm trying to both be dovik in Hashem and do things that are eternally useful and meaningful, and I'm also trying to do it without any stress and taking it easy and make a lot of money and die. Right, so that's a little hard to kind of pull those two together. So there's going to have to be some clarification of the mission statement, especially when you learn new things. As you learn new things, you have to go back and refine the mission statement. Otherwise, you're trying to satisfy the demands of multiple mission statements. And clearly, there's no way to be happy trying to satisfy the demands of more than one mission statement.
So is the mission statement the ideal?
The mission statement is the ideal. The mission statement is the ideal. I don't know if I would use the word ideal to describe the mission statement. It certainly is the business plan that I'm using to get towards the ideal. Right? It's the business plan is the mission statement.
What if there's certain aspects of your learning that you don't feel a blip for at all? You're darshaning sukking from Nach. You find there's no you're looking at the horizon, not a blip in sight. Do you artificially?
Who's making you do that?
Powers that be.
The powers that be are telling you that you have to dash in lots of psukim.
Following the flow of the Gemara.
You mean talking about this ancient Aramaic text?
No. You see the chashivas of the okay.
I'm saying, in other words, the problem is that these things like ancient Aramaic texts that don't speak to you at all. Are you talking about Psukim and Navi?
Psukim and Navi, which are brought in the Gemara. You find lots of aspects in the Gemara very, very interesting. They really hold you. You find the blips that are going through the roof to a certain extent. But there's other aspects that just don't catch at all.
The fact is, you're not going to be able to... Right now, these make a blip and these don't make a blip. But you have to recognize that before you heard what I said today, you were indifferent to the fact that you've got lots of blips going on in your life. Which means you have no way of knowing if figuring out the psukim is going to make a blip, because you are inundated with internal noise. So before you can make... Right now, it's true, the only things that are going to move you right now are things that make even more noise than the noise you're hearing internally all the time. And that's the juicy Gemaras. You know, those are the ones that are so noisy that they even make noise against the deafening noise that I've got inside. Once you start lowering the noise, you don't know what's going to happen. It could very well be that following the reasoning of Ravina and Ravashi through a set of psukim may very well make a blip on the screen. Right now, it's unreasonable to expect that it's going to make a blip. Right now, it's just what I need to do. But I look forward to the day when I've quelled so much of the internal noise that these gentle strings of, let's say, psukim that the Gemara is bringing from Nach speak to me. You're 100% correct. Where it stands right now, and that's why we sometimes need razzle-dazzle teachers who are going to razzle-dazzle us in shiur. What are they basically trying to do? They're trying to make more noise than the noise that we've got running through our head. I would never want to give somebody that job on purpose. Because what that does is it pits me against 7,433 television channels, every one of which is able to use more multifaceted and video devices for getting blips on my screen that he can't begin to compete with. No, but he's going to try to do it intellectually. He's going to try to, you know, spike a blip on the screen intellectually with me. I know that's not a race that I'm prepared to put money on. If I'm dealing with somebody who has managed to dampen the noise, and that fellow hears a shear, so he's likely to hear, and the blips will register. Question?
It seems as if this is all reactive. That we have a world around us, and the way to react to it is by is by lessening the urgency of things that don't need to. But how does one then work actively?
To seek out the things that do make a blip.
But it seems like our lives are already happening around us, without us necessarily taking part in 100% of things that come up. And so therefore, this is good for us, and this is a way for us to react and to say what really is important, what really which urgencies actually make, you know, make me move towards the mission statement. But the mission statement stands, and our mission statements are necessarily, as you say, our business plan towards the ideal. But this, or the, how then do we attack the mission statement without, how do we then attack the mission statement? Because urgencies have to be created. And if this is simply reactive, then we need to get to that point whereby we're not, we're either making urgencies. This just seems to say, calm down the ones that are already attacking us.
And amplify the ones that are working for us.
Perhaps. But that still only leads us to reacting to what's around us.
It's a good start. There's a lot of it going on. A lot of it going on. The what you do in order to create new such blips is you open up a chazal and you discover new blips. When you're reliably able to calm the noise and feel a blip, then when you open up a sefer, and certainly if you open up a sefer Musar, you're going to feel a lot of blips. And you must never pass over a blip. If a blip is there, you must amplify it in order to get anything from it. Because you want to actually use it to impel you forward, not just to store it as another blip, because that turns the Musar Sefer into noise. Easy enough to do. Just let the Musar Sefer and everything that you read in Chazal, just let it add to the overall noise level. In which case, somebody would have to really give you some fire and brimstone, which would last for about 9 seconds. You know, really razzle-dazzle the troops, last about 9 seconds, and then you move on. When you're looking for more inspiration than the inspiration from the things that are creating blips, then Chazal are there, ready to give you an enormous, enormous amount of inspiration. The formula for living is there in Chazal. But the formula for living cannot be useful, because the only way to get it from Chazal is by letting it register deeply. V'yadata hayom, you know something, v'ashevosa el levavecha. And then you drill it down into your heart by amplifying it and drilling it down into your heart so that it goes beyond just being a blip on the cognitive screen. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay, what do you do with that? I want to read further, because, boy, if he said such a nice thing, I want to see what else he has to say. Oh, that's good. That'll kill it. Okay, Rabosai. Take care.